afternoon, everybody out there in internet radio land all over the world. I imagine, since everyone nowadays has access to the internet, there could be many people listening in who don't speak any English, but maybe they just like my voice, or maybe they're trying to learn a little bit of English. Well, welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. It's a beautiful sunny afternoon here in San Antonio. I'm out here in my patio, which is my place, my little man cave, if you will. I'm here during the week, work week, I telework, and I love it. Come out here in the morning. I have to start at 7:30, and the birds are chattering around, flying around, and traffic is off in the distance, and then there's trees behind my backyard, and it's nice, a nice scenario. And got my fan going overhead here, and I wonder if maybe trying to get it going a little bit faster, better. Somebody turned that down by mistake. Maybe, anyway, so I had it up higher. Now it's kicking air. Well, how have you all been this last week? Another week in October as we're getting closer to colder days here. The autumn has started and we're on our way to winter. In the neighborhood, everyone's gotten into the spirit of Halloween. There's a house a few doors down that has all kinds of decorations in their yard and lights. It's almost like Christmas tree lights already. And there's a favorite restaurant we go to, Jim's. I don't know if you've heard of Jim's before. They're a chain here in southern Texas, open 24 hours. I don't know, they used to be, not anymore because of COVID, 10 to 6, I think. And they decorated the interior of their restaurant with Halloween decorations probably around the end of September. I guess people are just looking for a way out of this COVID crisis, which I wonder if it had to be that way, you know? It's so sad to think that some people are being really severely impacted by it. They don't have a job, don't have a lot of money to pay for their bills. And I was heading down the road this morning. I went and worked out at a track on Lackland Air Force Base, about 8 miles from here. And I may recommend a good band, if you like rock and roll, really intelligent, fun to listen to rock and roll. Sammy Hagar formed a group called Chickenfoot back around 2010, I think. So they've been together about 10 years. You know, Sammy Hagar, if you're familiar with him, used to be the front man for Van Halen. And I found out about Eddie the other day. I think he died after my last show, so I want to say that I knew Eddie. I might have mentioned it on my last show, I forget, but let me just put a couple words in here in case I don't remember. So in the event that I, either way, if I did or didn't, I would just say, may God bless his soul. He was a good man, and I was really inspired by his music when I was younger, as many rock and rollers are. In the rock and roll realm, there's hardly anybody that doesn't know about Van Halen. And in the 70s, they put out some really cool, beautiful, exciting albums, for lack of a better way of describing them. And they got me just on a higher plane of reality, so to speak. Although it was kind of in that rock and roll life, then it's party, 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 you know, and everything that goes along with it, you know what I mean. And Eddie Van Halen passed away. He had throat cancer, and I met him and the Van Halen crew and everyone else in the band came to our hotel I used to work at in San Diego. I was a bellman, and I took the baggage up to the room, and I saw Eddie and Alex sitting outside on the front porch, and they were brushing each other's hair, you know, something that brothers do. It was really cool to watch. Really nice guys. Alex, I took his bags up to his room. As I used to do as a bellman, I would go in there and take the bags off the cart, you know, and turn on the air conditioning, open up the curtains, tell them, you know, where the restaurant was and cafeteria, and they needed to rent a car and that kind of stuff. And Alex said, he jumped on the bed and said, you know where I can get a Camaro? I want to rent a Camaro. So I had to look into that for him. And David Lee Roth, I remember him. He was looking at me like when I was carrying the bags. So I was lifting up these bags, this full cart of bags. And he gave me this look I'll never forget. And he's such a neat person. But the look on his face was like, man, what's someone like you doing in a job like this? Manual labor. Here am I, you know, a rock star. Maybe you could see that I was kind of a rock star, too. And I am, in a way. I've got a repertoire of over 120 songs that I know by heart. And I've been told I'm a karaoke king. So I'm really good with music. And I'm in a choir. Although we haven't sung since back in mid-March, a gospel choir. My wife, she's African-American. So we started going to this gospel service at the chapel, and the chapel's on Lackland Air Force Base. And well, we can sing, we can praise God really well. You know, we've got some excellent songs, just beautiful, beautiful gospel songs, you know, from the past. When the African-Americans were enslaved those few hundred years in the past, they became very close to God. You know, they were so mistreated, and a lot of them were killed during that time, you know, as you can imagine. And so they made these beautiful worship songs, praise songs, you know. Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, for one, you know. I mean, think about it. They just didn't make that up out of from some five-year-old's fantasy book, you know. That stuff really happens. You know, chariot, going to heaven in a chariot is one way that you can go to heaven. There's lots of other ways too. Angels, deceased relatives, you know, meeting your spirit when you finally give up the ghost, you know, your heart stops beating on that one day in the future, hopefully far in the future, right? Because every day on earth is a gift, a blessing, amen. Yeah, every day. So learn what you can before it's too late, right? And when I say learn, I mean spirituality. So if you're listening to my show, I know you've tuned in because I talk about spiritual matters. I mean, I don't hold any punches when it comes to that regard. You might say I'm a very brave person. Thank you, I am. Because I talk about heaven. I talk about dying. I talk about the universe, God, Mother God, where heaven is. Heaven is the sun. You know, there's more than one heaven out there because you have to realize there's the supreme creator who created the universe in the Big Bang, one solar system after another, and one galaxy after another, you know, and so many solar systems can fit in a galaxy, right? And then there are co-creator gods who are in charge of their solar systems, and they create their solar systems, oh, that's a tongue twister, say it fast, three times, solar systems. Anyway, so just think right now, as we talk, as I talk, as we live, the boundaries of infinite space are expanding. The edges of infinite space are expanding. Isn't that amazing? And solar systems are being created as we talk, as I talk, as you talk. Amazing, right? Thanks to God. Thanks to the Supreme Creator and the Mother and Father God. So our solar system is commanded, if you will, by a Mother and Father God who created it by using the words that the Supreme Creator put into effect within the creation, after the creation of the universe. If you know how to utilize those words, utilize those cosmic forces, you know what I mean, cosmic forces, powers, words, you see, the Bible is right in as much as it says, in the beginning was the Word, and was Word, and the Word was with God, and nothing was created without the Word. So think about it now. When you use words, I use words, we have the power to create. Let there be light. It's as simple as that. But obviously more detailed. You have to know what you're doing, and you have to do it with the soulmate. You have to, just like a male and female, when they procreate, a baby, you know, under ideal circumstances, a baby is formed, right, in the female's womb. They need the male seed and the female, excuse me, the male sperm and the female seed to create an embryo, which is what we were at one time, hello, for 9 months in our mother's womb, hello. I know you can't remember, we can't remember that, can we? But we were being formed in our mother's womb for 9 months. Amazing thing. We were all there at one time. We all went through that, and we were born into this world. Can't remember too much. Even though our eyes and our brain are like cameras, you know, they have that photographic retention abilities, those photographic retention abilities, and can be accessed through different ways. Hypnosis is one, you know. I can remember back when I was 2 years old, living in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. My dad was stationed there in the Canadian Army. And I can remember a few scenes, not much before then, though. After that, of course, more and more throughout the years, being born and raised in Canada. I'm a U.S. citizen now, but I remember a lot of other things in my past. And maybe one thing about my music that I know now, when you get up on stage and you sing a song, you have to remember the words. It's a test in memory. You have to remember the words at different times throughout the song. You have to have your timing and your harmony right, you know. Anyway, so during the show, I was going to read to you from this book called The Contact Has Begun. But before I do that, I'd just like to tell you, and as I mentioned before, anything I might say that could be considered applicable to your own life, let me ask you to consult your physician, your doctor first. I mean, this is serious stuff, you know. I don't want to be sued. So what I'm about to tell you, if you want to try it, go ahead. Please go ahead and consult the physician first in case, you know, it might not be right for you. It's all right for me. So one of my favorite exercises is running. I go to this track. There's two tracks, actually, on Lackland Air Force Base. I'm going to take a drink of water. There's some blue jays that have come, I guess, from down north, because now it's getting a little bit cooler up there, and they haven't been around for months, and all of a sudden, they're hanging out in their backyard. You know, to get back, you hear them? Right now, there's one that has got a loud noise. I mean, God made them. I'm not trying to make fun of their noise, but it's very loud, you know? And anyway, I suppose he'll go away eventually. So they come from up north when the weather gets colder, because they like the more temperate climates, I think. So anyway, what I found, I've done a lot of running, mainly fast running, over the last few years. And I would say over the last 4 or 5 years, I have done maybe 1,000 100-meter sprints. And I like the way I feel after sprinting, because when you push your body to its limits, you know, maybe not totally as fast as you can go, or as fast as you can go, there's something about that that leaves your body feeling good afterwards. And I figured out what it was. And that is, it gets your heart beating to the maximum extent. That's what they recommend. The doctors recommend that you exercise your heart so you can reach the maximum heart rate, you know. But for me, I was into a lot of heavy running in my life. When I was in the Army, we used to run, of course, all the time, you know, in formations. But then I would say in the prime of my life, I was about 38 years old, living in Monterey, California. And I was studying Turkish at the Language Institute there for 1 year. And I was the captain of one of the Army company run teams. And we used to meet every morning about 6 o'clock. You know, we would do the warm-up exercises, and then we would go and do different runs. We would do a long run down by the coast. They've got huge hills there in Monterey, and then we would do hill runs. I mean, a huge hill going up to the Language Institute. And then we would do the two-mile run and time ourselves, and we would do what they call fartleks, where we run in formation, then sprint from the back to the front, and just go at like a pretty slow pace, you know, and the person would, in the back, would run up to the front, and so on. And we would do runs around the different schools there. So anyway, I was into some pretty heavy running, and I've been studying a lot of the sprinters. Usain Bolt, you know, he won the 100-meter, 200-meter runs in the last three Olympics. So sad that they had to postpone the Tokyo Olympics this year, you know, because of COVID, but hopefully they'll be on next year. But other famous, I've been studying them all now. Noah Lyles is the one up-and-coming sprinter. He won the 200-meter run at the championship last year. And then there's Christian Coleman and, of course, Justin Gatlin and a lot of other sprinters. Now, when you sprint, you notice that some of the sprinters, they open their palms when they sprint. Carl Lewis used to do that, and I was experimenting with that. However, I noticed that, and just recently only, that my left foot was being affected some way, as if maybe I wasn't even holding my, I mean, you're not supposed to, when you sprint, put your hands in front of your chest so much, you know. But I was always having a problem with my little toe, my left foot, and the toe next to it, a horn would develop there, and it was very painful. It's just terribly painful sometimes. It's amazing how just the body has so much potential for pain, you know, in that area there. And so I've been adjusting holding my hands, and now I don't clench my fist, but I cup my fist so that I don't do the open palm for sprinting, and already it feels better. So what I do is there's these different tracks. There's a one-mile dirt track on Lackland Air Force Base, then there's the 400-meter round kind of rubber track. And I've been... Today I went to the dirt track, and I did some sprints. At first I did... I kind of just realized it today. I mean, I've been suspecting it now, but every day that I'm not feeling this pain in my left foot is a good thing. And so I've isolated what I was doing wrong. But now my favorite wave, this is a work in progress, ladies and gentlemen out there. My favorite thing now is to just walk a mile, and within that mile, I sprint once or twice. And if you go more than a mile, just repeat. You know, and that works for me. And so I get the benefits of walking and running. And I don't have to run very far. All I need to do is 100 meters. You can check it out on the internet. It is a great substitute for running distances, especially if you don't have a lot of time. And it's great for your body. Look at on the internet at all the benefits of sprinting. Metabolism, human growth, hormones. Your breathing is better, and your whole body, I mean, your heart too. That's probably one of the main things, because you don't lose a lot of muscle too. Like if you're a marathon runner, you compare a marathon runner with a sprinter, like an Olympic sprinter, and you can see the difference in body mass. You know, the marathon runner is a lot thinner and doesn't seem to have a lot of muscle compared to a sprinter. So it builds muscle, and then it keeps on, and it burns calories too. And it keeps on burning calories afterwards. So I might suggest that the ideal exercise, ladies and gentlemen, is walking and sprinting. Maybe even if you can only do one sprint for 100 meters. I've been working on this diligently, obsessed with it, for my own personal well-being and for sharing it with other people too, because what might work for you. So that's what I'd say. Now, 200 meters, I've had 200 meter, 400 meter runs, 800 meters, 1 mile, 3 miles. Now I like the sprint actually is better for your heart. It increases the heart rate to the maximum, more than 200, unless you sprint 200 meters, but that's no fun. That's painful. The 100 meter sprint is actually very easy. You just move your legs, pump your arms, 5, 10, 15 seconds, that's it. It's over with. And you achieve all those benefits. But like I said, don't just go out and do it. Check with your physician first. It's okay to sprint. Okay, and so now my foot feels a lot better. Oh, thank God. I mean, talk about pain. Just that little corn in between my little toe, on my left foot and the next toe, was terribly painful. I figured it out. Carl Lewis, no offense to you, but I'm not going to be doing the sprinting with my hands open like I used to before in the past. It took me all that time to figure out what I was doing wrong. Do the right thing. Isn't that the way it goes? Also, I mentioned to you on a previous show that I have sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea. And I was using a CPAP machine, but then I was starting to get sick. You know, pumps air into your nose and your lungs. And I used to, before that, I have the window open and I'm trying all kinds of pillows, contour pillows. I didn't try my pillow, but I don't see how that can be much better, actually. Regardless of what the guy said, I tried, so many pillows. Now I'm sleeping with a wedge pillow. It's like a 2 feet long, 2 feet wide, and about 7 inches tall at the highest point at the back. And I found out the other week I went to a doctor to see if I had GERD. I mentioned that on a previous show because my lawyer, who's helped me to get disability from the VA, and it's associated with the kidney donation that I gave back to my son back in 1995 when I was in the Army. And he said, you have GERD and symptoms of IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Now, I don't want to discourage anybody from donating a kidney, you know, because it's been 25 years. And it all depends on how strong you are. You know, I had some back issues when I was in the Army. And to be honest with you, I didn't always treat myself well growing up. And then there's to be considered and this is a real consideration, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm doing well, first of all, before I tell you this. I'm doing fine. You know, my body is working well. I can sprint. I can run. And I'm a vegan, vegetarian. You know, I became a vegan in 1999. I was talking with my son today. And I did that because I wanted to gravitate to a healthier lifestyle. As I mentioned, I was into some pretty serious running. So it was natural, I think, for me to become a vegan in 1999. So it's been 21 years. And the ethical part, without even going to the ethical part of it, the healthy part is that you eat food that's a lot easier to digest. So you don't become constipated as often, putting it bluntly, you know. And before that, I was having problems with constipation. But since I became a vegan, hardly at all. I mean, it's been great in that respect. But then again, when you eat some of the harder food that's hard to digest, like beef, you know, or whatever kind of meat, chicken, fish, pork, it's harder to digest. The body can digest it, and the body can use it for growth, but it's hard to digest. And for me, and you can check this out on the internet too, other people who have donated kidneys who have only had one kidney, or people that were born with one kidney, automatically gravitate towards a healthier lifestyle, eating food that's easy to digest. And you drink more water. You know, you pull out all the stops, so to speak, because you want to ensure your longevity, which makes sense, right? So someone, you know, with two healthy kidneys, then, you know, I'm just saying that go for what you know, for sure, but also be open-minded to what might be better, a healthier lifestyle. But then you're all co-creator, God's in the making, you have free will. You can do what you want to do. I'm just saying that I need to do that. What I was about to say was, also, you have to take into consideration, you know, when you were in your mother's womb, during that time, during fetal development, how your mother ate and what she ingested does ultimately affect the embryo, you know, and how you turn out as a baby. You could be undernourished. I mean, take like a crack mother, you know, has a baby. She's taking crack cocaine or, you know, maybe smoking. My mother smoked and she drank. She thought it was okay. In her rationale, she thought that was fine. She figured, well, I'm doing it, so it should be okay for the baby, you know. But to give you a kind of funny comparison in the way of an analogy, think of the movie Happy Feet, you know, with the baby, Happy Feet, he's born. You know what happened? The egg that was being sat upon by the father got out from underneath his feet and rolled out into the cold Arctic air. And as a result, his development within the egg was affected in some way. And so he didn't turn out like the other penguins. Well, I think that's the same with me anyway, and a lot of other people out there too. It's very important that mothers eat properly, feed the babies the nutrition they need, for them not to smoke or drink also, and for the father too, you know, especially when they are trying to procreate during that time, because believe it or not, the sperm of the male also has the right amounts of, has certain amounts of cellular, for lack of a better way of describing it, that cellular, how would you say, input or cellular structure, which would then ultimately assist in the creation of the embryo when united with the female's egg, if you know what I mean. And so it's important, it behooves the male also to be doing the right things at the time of procreation and before that, you know, a year or two, not to be drinking or smoking or taking drugs. Or, do you see what, the kind of world we live in? I know there's a lot of other people like myself too, but taking that into consideration, you know, one does have to make these changes in one's lifestyle to ensure one's longevity. If I want to live to be a ripe old age, as I mentioned, you know, every day on earth is a gift, it's a blessing, and a chance to learn new things. So enough about that. Moving on to the next subject, which is the election coming up. And I've been watching, I've watched the town hall. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you, I'm leaning more towards, I haven't voted yet, I've been holding off. And I'm leaning more towards voting for Mr. Trump. I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, I think they're very brave, both of them. It takes a lot of time and effort to be going out there on the campaign trail, you know, day after day, going from one event to the other and talking. Can you imagine talking for an hour and a half? It's hard. You know, I'm talking for an hour. I mean, it can be challenging enough, but imagine, you know, both of them are talking maybe 4 or 5 hours a day, I mean, straight talking, going over the same kind of stuff, adding new things to their verbiage, you know. And so why Mr. Trump? Well, one thing is, and I've been voting Democrat all of the years in the past. Far back as I can remember, I voted Democrat. I voted for Hillary back in 2016, but I just think he's been treated so bad from the very beginning. I do not believe, no matter what anybody says, and I've heard all of the evidence, maybe not as much as you or other people, but I don't believe there was any Russian collusion. I don't think he needed any help from the Russians. If I would believe anyone was more inclined to have got help from the Russians, it would have been Hillary Clinton and the Clintons. So I think that was a hoax. You know, he fired, from what I understand, Trump fired Tim Comey. And so then they launched an independent investigation and said that Robert Mueller in that 2 years, they didn't have any evidence that there was collusion. I mean, they didn't exonerate him, but so, my God, imagine that if you were president, you have all these high hopes and dreams, you want to make America great again, you're a billionaire businessman, you can see what's going on, you can see other countries taking advantage of us, you know, China for one. You see that our debt's $20 trillion and more. And, okay, Mr. Trump says, I'll figure this out. I'll help America. I don't have to. Dang it. You know, I could stay here in my job, make my billions of dollars, fly around in my own private aircraft. But no, I'm going to help America. And guess what? Maybe I can become a president, you know, go down in history. It's a cool thing, right, to be considered a president. Maybe you have your I guess I can't put his face on Mount Rushmore. Rushmore. But anyway, so then right after the Russian collusion, then the impeachment. So he makes a phone call to the Ukrainian president, asks him to investigate Joe Biden. And guess what? They're bringing it up now, the same thing. You know, that Hunter Biden was involved with Burisma and doing some illegal stuff there only because he was Joe Biden's son and he was getting all these thousands and millions of dollars, which was not right, you know. And so maybe a little bit of corruption going on there. So Mr. Trump wanted to find out whether it was, maybe he just overheard it. You know, maybe he didn't initiate it. Maybe it was Rudy Giuliani or someone else, or they just got some whistleblower told him, you know, and they thought, well, let's investigate this. You know, what would have been the options, ladies and gentlemen, to say, no, we don't want to investigate it because we can get in trouble because the Democrats then will be on our case. No, they did the right thing. You know, let's find out if this is true or not. And next thing, he's impeached by the House, only because the House had just turned to Democrat, you know. Unkind, unfair. Hello. Yeah, that's what I think, in my opinion. So then COVID hit, and I don't know whose fault that was. You can blame it on the Chinese, right? The Chinese flu with the Chinese virus. But then I also wonder if it was invented in a Chinese lab. And I've read, you know, what some people think about that. I don't believe some people, what they say. I'm naturally suspicious, you know, because we were slamming China with tariffs. And, you know, they saw their billions of dollars disappearing under Mr. Trump. And they might have said, well, if we start this, you know, and if we control it in our own country, and we'll take down the United States, but, I mean, it's a possibility. You have to consider that logically. It's a possibility. Now, I don't want us to get into a nuclear war with China or anyone else, but I'm just saying, you know, we can talk about our differences. You know, we can, but just get along together, you know. Same with Russia also. Some people say, well, we should, Putin, you know, he's doing these things. And how can you be friendly to a man like that? Well, what would you prefer? Would you prefer that we get into a nuclear war and have mutual destruction, you know, because we can't resolve our differences diplomatically? That's what Mr. Trump's trying to do. He's trying to be a friend. Why can't you would too, I'll bet. If you were president, you have to consider, you know, the Russians, they're just like us. They're human beings, you know. We've been competing with them for so long. It's no wonder, you know, they've got this animosity going on between the two countries. So one day, ultimately, come on, bury the hatchet. Let's just get along. But no, they say, we can't go along with someone like that. You know, we need to impose economic sanctions on them. Wrong. Come on, same thing with North Korea. They were talking about blowing up our West Coast until Mr. Trump went to talk with Kim Jong-un. you know, that's cool. I like that, you know. He reached out because you know how they were. They were talking about, oh, the United States is going to, the West Coast is going to be enveloped in fire and death, and many Americans will die. And they've got nuclear weapons, and they've got the missiles that can take them, you know, many long distances, you know. It's a reality. I don't know how many nuclear warheads they have or how many long-range missiles, but they can reach the American West Coast from Korea, you know. So same thing. How would you negotiate with someone like that? Why would you want to antagonize them when you're taking the risk of angering them to the point where they might press the button, you know? Is that the wise way of doing things? Also, with the Democrats, I understand about being pro-life, and pro-choice. But isn't the opposite of pro-life anti-life? I just know that as a baby, and you were a baby too at one time, we were very helpless and defenseless during our fetal development in a mother's wombs. What if at that time we had been aborted or miscarried? My mother had a miscarriage. You wouldn't be here today. It'd be like It's a Wonderful Life with, what's his name? I can't remember his name. But you know the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. The man, he, all of a sudden, it's like he was never born. So it could have been like that for you and me, you know? Jimmy, I'll forget his name. Jimmy Cagney? No, Jimmy Stewart, that's it. Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life. So pro-choice or anti-life? You know, it's just a play on words, really. I understand about the woman's right to choose. But then again, you know, I think if they overturn Roe versus Wade, for example, then they say that they don't want big government interfering with a woman's body. But would it be that bad? I wonder. I mean, we don't really know how it would be. What was it like before Roe versus Wade? I wonder also about rape and incest. Is it possible that there could have been more rapes and more incest before Roe versus Wade? I don't know what the statistics are. It's possible that there could have been less rapes and incest before Roe versus Wade. And then after, there might have been more rape and incest, because in the scheme of things, some people might think, well, the woman can have an abortion, so, you know, I'm a lot freer to do whatever I want to do. Is that logical? Is that logical? I don't know what the numbers are, but I understand about the woman's right to choose, but then again, life is life, you know? Funny how that's worded, pro-life versus pro-choice. So in other words, if the Republicans are pro-life, then the Democrats have to be anti-life. That's another way of looking at it. Might that make sense? Because truly, and I don't know what God's, you know, our mother and father God in heaven, the supreme creator, I believe that they want life. They are pro-life. But they also understand that a woman has to make a decision when it comes to having an abortion. And it's really their decision compared to the man's, because the baby is growing in their body. It's a very difficult and contentious issue, my friends. And I'm not trying to change your mind one way or the other. I'm just putting it out there. You know, I only talk about logic. I'm a very logical person. So forgive me, please, if I offended you. I'm just, as with other things, I use logic to determine knowledge, you know, to bridge the gap between belief and knowledge, sometimes we have to do that. It's like that life with life elsewhere in the universe, you know. A lot of us are stuck in that mindset where we believe that there is no life out there. But that's another thing, too. You know, as in the movie Heaven is for Real and in the book, the young man has a near-death experience. And so if you know anything about that, the miscarried baby, who was his sister that he met in heaven, wound up as a spirit there in the spirit land or heaven. So miscarried babies or aborted babies, they were inhabited by the spirit and soul of a being, if you will, like you and me, that had been planned before their birth in that pre-existence that you probably know very little about, some of you, where we all come from and we all will return to. And thanks to the process of reincarnation, we are born on other planets in the universe. A miscarried or aborted baby could be, when they lost their chance to be born here on Earth, then they have to find another body and maybe be born on Earth again, somewhere else, or on another planet in the Milky Way galaxy that is similar to Earth, or maybe even in another galaxy elsewhere, the Andromeda galaxy, for example, or the Large Magellanic Cloud galaxy. Yes, it's real, as real as life and death. I wouldn't tell you that otherwise. There's so much we need to know. I mean, our knowledge right now as we evolve on this lower category of evolution planet is like the tip of an iceberg. There's so much more to know underneath the surface of the water. There's a huge, huge chunk of ice, but we only see the tip of it. That's what our knowledge is like, and compared to what all there is to know. And so I mentioned this to you before on other shows, if you remember. Maybe some might be tuning in for the first time. If so, welcome. So much life here on Earth, if all this life happened here by accident, then it could happen by accident elsewhere in the universe. But if there is a creator who has the knowledge and the power to create this life, then logically that creator would have the power and the knowledge to create either the same or even different life as we can't imagine it anywhere. And I do mean A-N-Y-W-H-E-R-E in the universe. So how am I doing on time here? Let me go back to what I was saying. And then there's other things about the Republicans and Democrats. I might even vote for the Green Party. I don't know. Or maybe Kanye West. I'm undecided. I'm going to wait until, I think, next Thursday, the following Thursday, the 29th, day before early voting ends, before I go and vote, because I don't want to be caught up with all that voting on voting day, the 3rd of November. So I've got 6:45. Oh, man, time flies. So let me read a little bit from this book, The Contact Has Begun. I love reading out loud. There's power in that. You ought to try it yourself. Stand up and read out loud, my friends, because it is good. Grab a book. Don't look at your computer or your handheld device, your phone or your iPad, because get back to the reality of hard copy pages, my friends. Better for your eyes, you know, less glare. Okay, chapter one, The Unthinkable Occurs. This is The Contact Has Begun by Phil Kraft. He was an editor on the LA Times Metro Desk for 25 years. He participated in the L.A. riots and was a part of, he won part of the Pulitzer Prize for that. And so he claimed that he was abducted aboard an alien spaceship back in the 90s, I think, 97. And he was on board that ship for 3 days. And it was a ship that belongs to a group of extraterrestrials called the Verdants, V-E-R-D-A-N-T-S, who are kind of like the stereotypical gray aliens that we hear so much about, 5 feet tall with big dark eyes. Anyway, I actually reached out to him when I was in my last duty assignment in the Army in Caracas, Venezuela, back around 2002, and we exchanged a few emails. He's a really cool guy, and he's an excellent, excellent author, and he's a very funny, humorous guy, too. So you got to check out this book, The Contact Has Begun. It is an excellent read, and here goes. I awoke with a start and found the bedroom bathed in a bluish, iridescent light. At first, I thought I had fallen asleep with the TV on. I groped for the remote control on the nightstand. The lighted dial on the bedside digital clock radio read 2:32 a.m. It was early Wednesday, June 11, 1997. So there it is. And by the way, also with the, I'm undecided whether I'm going to vote Republican or Democrat. I just thought of something. I don't like how the Republicans are ignoring the global warming, which I know is a reality. So I'm taking that into consideration, too. I just forgot to mention that. I leave a lot of on things, a lot of loose ends, I know, when I talk, and I apologize for that. There's so much to talk about, and so little time. 1 hour, believe it or not, goes by really quickly. So anyway, back to the book. I turned to aim the remote at the TV set, but the screen was dark. A small, cold shiver of apprehension raced down my spine as I tried to identify and comprehend the source of the eerie light. Since I consider myself an extremely rational person and am as devoid of superstitious beliefs as humanly possible, my racing mind was searching for a logical explanation. At the same time, the light slowly began to pulsate and shimmer, changing alternately to a slightly darker shade of blue and then brightening to a lighter shade of blue-white. I reached for my glasses on the nightstand and then turned my attention to the bedroom window, thinking that perhaps the strange light was coming from there. But the drapes were tightly drawn. No, this light definitely had to be originating from inside the room. And I was more mystified than fearful. I swung out of bed and headed for the doorway and the wall switch that controls the bedroom light. But I got no more than two or three steps before the pulsating bluish white light, which had washed the room in a subdued floodlight fashion, suddenly narrowed into a tightly concentrated spotlight beam, and it was focused directly on me. Gravity seemed to take a holiday. I could feel no weight on my bare feet against the carpeted floor. My brain was still dealing with this when I suddenly began to rise, like a pea being sucked up into a drinking straw. Only in this case, the drinking straw was the beam of light, and I was the pea. Under ordinary circumstances, I think that the normal human reaction would be to scream out in abject animal terror. But before my autonomic nervous system could even trigger such a response, I was overwhelmed by a sense of peace and tranquility. I didn't have time to analyze it because the sensation of rising seemed to last no more than a second or two. As I would learn later, the beam of light itself, the drinking straw in which I was firmly enclosed, caressed me as I traveled along its length and actually triggered the calming effect that enveloped me. Just as quickly as it had started, the journey ended. I don't think that more than 2 seconds had passed between the time the light first focused on me and the time that I found myself in a very large room facing the strangest creatures that I had ever seen. Deep down, I suppose, I knew what had happened to me, but my psyche was still trying to deny it. There probably aren't many people who haven't heard or read about the tales of alien abductions that have been circulating on television shows, in magazines, and even in best-selling books for years. I didn't personally know anyone who believed the stories, although I was aware that there were vast numbers of people convinced of their authenticity. I was not one of them. But no amount of denial was going to alter the fact that I was abducted, I was on a spacecraft, and I was among extraterrestrials. There was no other explanation, except that I might be dreaming. But I knew that this was no dream, no nightmare. This was real. Every concept that I'd held regarding so-called alien abductions went out the window. I thought at the time that no person had ever been as wrong about the subject as I had been. The stories that I had so cavalierly dismissed in the past as the delusions of troubled people were actually true, it appeared. In the past, whenever I had given even passing attention to these tales, I thought that such an experience would not be survivable, that the human mind would simply snap at the shock and immediately plunge into an abyss of insanity. The fact that I was completely at peace and devoid of any fear seemed to belie the reality. The strongest emotion I felt at the time, to be honest, was one of unbridled curiosity. I was standing among a group of three alien beings, and I was still cloaked in a beam of light that apparently had transported me. But now I could see the source of the beam, a small disc about 3 inches in diameter that was attached to the ceiling on a swivel. At my side was what appeared to be a padded clinical table, similar to what one would find in a chiropractor's office or in an examination room in a typical American medical office. The creatures themselves were very uniform in height, ranging from about 5 feet 2 inches to perhaps 5 feet 4. They were quite slender by human standards and had dark eyes that shone out from slanted openings that were not much more than slits. Their noses were very small, almost non-existent, with two tiny black dots that appeared to be nostrils. Similarly, their mouths were not more than slits either, with thin lips that hardly had any definition. I saw no indication of teeth. The ears were slightly larger than human ones in proportion to their size, and they were somewhat pointed. They reminded me of the ears of the fictional Mr. Spock of the Star Trek series, TV series. I could discern no body hair. There was an interesting range in the creature's skin coloring, almost a multiracial element. But unlike the different races on Earth with their distinct facial characteristics, such as lip thickness and nose and eye shapes, their features were uniform. Skin color ranged from grayish white with a barely perceptible greenish tint to a muted tan with the same greenish tinge. All of these beings wore flowing, robe-like garments in various pastel shades. I did not know at the time, of course, if this was their ordinary clothing, or perhaps a uniform. It might have been professional garb, much like the surgical gowns worn by human medical doctors at a hospital. As I said, the room was large, rectangular in shape, and perhaps 600 feet by 400 feet, measuring about 20 feet from floor to ceiling. It was brilliantly lit and reminded me of a hospital ward, but the biggest one I had ever seen, with hundreds of tables identical to the one at which I stood. The tables were neatly arranged in rows, spaced about 10 to 15 feet apart, stretching from wall to wall in all four directions. Above each table, attached to the ceiling, was a disc from which the beam of light that had enveloped me originated. Clustered around the tables were teams of 3 to 5 extraterrestrial ET creatures. Although I could not see details of the far reaches of the room, I noticed that the majority of the tables around me were occupied by very ordinary human beings. Most of them were reclining in various postures, some on their sides, and others in the prone and supine positions as the ETs bent over them in what appeared to be close scrutiny. A few, however, were standing beside the tables. At first, I assumed, like me, they had just arrived. I noticed that a couple of people, a black man, normally I've referred to him as an African-American, but I had no way of knowing if he was an American, an African, a Jamaican, or whatever, of about 25 or 30, and a Caucasian teenage girl, appeared to be engaged in quiet conversation with the aliens who clustered around them. A muted noise filled the room. There was something about it that was at once slightly familiar, yet frustratingly just out of my grasp of identification. And paradoxically, it was like nothing I had ever heard before. Then I seized upon it, the buzz of a large audience during intermission. Conversation. But the sounds were totally beyond those of any foreign language I had ever heard. The ETs standing around the tables were involved in hundreds of conversations as the team studied their subjects. The light that held me in its focus suddenly flickered and went out. One of the three creatures in my cluster took a step forward towards me and said, "I am Guantuel Mitza." At least that's what it sounded like to my ear. I've spelled it phonetically here, or as close to it as I possibly can, but a case could be made for spelling it in a number of other variations, such as Guantel Mepsa or Quantel Mipsa. The snippets of conversations that I caught from the ETs at several nearby tables made me wonder. Well, my friends, I've got 1 minute left, and forgive me if I offended you in any way. My intention was not to do so. I just put things out to ask you to consider something logically. My mind is being changed by people constantly, all the time. And we are all God's co-creator, God's in the making. So remember that, please. You have free will. And I know God, the Supreme Creator, and our Mother and Father God love you very much, and I do also. So take care, and may God bless us, everyone. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.